Okay, we'll start at the bottom of Kuf Lamed Zayin Amud Bet. The Gemara says, Amar Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Kotev Nechasav Le'acher, person who writes his property to someone else, V'amar Hala, Yef Shibahen. The other person says, not interested in what you're giving him. Kana. It's too bad, he's Konedim. V'afilu Umeid V'itzovech. Even if he's standing there screaming, I don't want it, he's already acquired it, he has it, and it does not work. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Yochanan says, lo kana, doesn't get it, doesn't have a, he's not forced to acquire this gift that's been granted to him. So Amar Rabbi Abba bar Mamel v'lo pligi, they don't argue. Kan b'tzavach mi'ikara, kan b'shotek mi'ikara u'lusof tzavach. So now the possibility, the way that the Rashbam explains this is kan, tzavach mi'ikara means that before the gift ever reaches him, therefore he says no thank you. So if he says no thank you before the gift reaches him, then he was never in his possession, and he never has to relinquish any control. What he did was he blocked or he rejected the zchut that was coming to his hands, and we've seen this before, that you can say efshi. Then, kan b'shotek mi'ikara u'lusof tzavach. The other case was that the gift came into his possession already. He was silent, and then the gift was, or the zchut that was being offered to him then took effect. And then afterwards he says, oh, I don't want it. There he's trying to relinquish balut, relinquish ownership. And we know that efshi or all these terms don't work. He has to actually be maskir it. He has to remove his ownership. So the difference is when he objects to the gift. If he objects to the gift before it ever reaches his possession, then fine. If he objects to the gift only after it's in his possession, then the objection is meaningless because it's already his. And then he has to do an action that removes his ownership rather than simply rejecting it. Question is, when he says, "Atzoveach mikara," going to the Rashbam, he screams out and he says, "I don't want it," then who owns the property? There was the grantor of the gift. There is a recipient of the gift. The recipient of the gift says, no thanks. But the grantor already gifted it. So where is the status of the property? So the Rashbam claims that it's hefker. Property's hefker. Why? Because the grantor already relinquished his control. He says, take it. I want you to have it. It's gone. It's out of his control. The recipient says, no thank you. It doesn't go into his. And so it's left in this limbo state with neither the grantor owning it now or the recipient. And then it says that it's hefker, so kolakodim zacha. Whoever takes it first, well, machzikba would be zoche in the property.
Well, if that's enough to make it hefker, so why the other way around? When he's silent at first, then it becomes his, and then he says, I want it, so why should
that? No, I don't want it is not a relinquishing of control. That's just saying, right, that's a statement of, let's see, I don't know, it's an emotional statement that I don't want it, or it's a, right, a feeling, but the other person granted it. He fully gave the gift. He's doing it in what otherwise would be a way to relinquish control by the receipt of the other.
He's not being mocked, right? He's giving his own gift to someone else.
Right. Tosfos disagrees with the Rashbam's interpretation a little bit for what Shaul is suggesting over here. Why should the mere fact that you give the gift make it hefker? You gave the gift because you wanted the recipient to get it. And so you relinquish control, but with the intent, right, that you wanted it to the recipient to take it. But if the recipient doesn't take it, you didn't just relinquish control entirely. You didn't want to mafkir it. Things along the lines show of what you were just suggesting over here. So Tosva says that he doesn't think that's the right explanation here of tzavach mikara versus shotek mikara versus tzavach. So then he says, he explains over here, I'll just read you the parts, little parts of the Tosva, large Tosva. Aval itzavach mikara. He screams originally, L'chuli ama, kvar zochwa yorshim, v'lo avi hefker. He says that if he tzalach meikara, there is no hefker over here. There's no hefker. If he says, I don't want it, it reverts back to the grantor, and then if the grantor is not in there, then his yorshim will take it. But there's no such thing. There's no, just because he tried to grant a gift, doesn't mean that he was mafkir the property. Ve'kishlokish kamar, davi hefker. And on the end, Ve'kishlokish says, it's hefker. And it's only after it's reached his hand, then in the end, when he was silent, and then he screams about it, And over here in our Gemara it says, when you're silent and then you know you scream afterwards, you're koneh. That means that you're koneh enough that it's out of the possession of the grantor, but not that means that you're not hefker. They go back to the original grantor. He only granted it with the intent or the condition that the recipient takes it. So based on that, the way Tosfos is going to read it now, as opposed to the Rashbam, who reads it like what we've seen in other places, when you lose a learn of EFSHI, you lose a learn of Bitula, those Lashonot only work before it comes into your possession. And then, once it's in your possession, you have to do a full-fledged Hefker. That's the way the Rashbam explains our Kan Tzavach Mikara, Kan Shotek Mikara Lusov Tzavach. Tosfos says he doesn't like that, because he doesn't like the Rashbam's conclusion that it's Hefker. And we have a problem as a Rish Lakish, who we paskin like, and they're trying to reconcile with this position of Reish Lakish. So when does Rabbi Reish Lakish say that it's going to be hefker, that it doesn't return to the notain? So Tosfos over here says that's no. That there are two different stages. If he was tzavach mikara, means that when it first came into his possession, means lo kana, means that he's not koned enough, so that it becomes hefker. I mean that when you say, when you block it from ever coming into your possession, it returns to the grantor. On the other hand, if you are shotek mikara, if you're silent up front, and then lesov tzavach, and now you're stopping the gift, so then it does not return to the original grantor. It's left his possession already, and therefore if you're rejecting it and you use a proper lashon hefker, or you redo a proper lashon that rejects it, in that instance, it's out of your possession, it's out of the grantor's position, that's when it's hefker. So Tosfos and the Rashbam are arguing about where's the instance where the grantor's relinquished control. Right? According to the Rashbam, it's in the case where you reject the gift up front. The other Rashbam says, already, that's hefker. Everybody's relinquished control in that case. The grantor is given, the recipient refuses, it's hefker. Tosfos says that's not a case. It has the grantor only loses control once the recipient has taken it. And therefore, Tosfos says the case where the grantor has no rights, or where Reish Lakish has made a statement that it's hefker, is only when it's shatak or lusov tzavach, where he already took it into the recipient already took the gift. When the recipient took the gift, the grantor is out of the picture. Then if he rejects it or he throws it out somehow, manages to get out of his possession, that's when it will be hefker. That's when it will be in neither of their possessions. All right, so now Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak, zichalo ayudei acher. What happens if he granted it to him through a third party? That it was, right, we have a zochin adam shelo b'fanav. So here, someone else is accepting on his behalf. Vishatak. And he was silent. Ulutzov tzavach. Then at the end, he started to scream about it. Banu l'machloket b'shimen gamliel v'rabbanan. This is a machloket between b'shimen gamliel v'rabbanan. T'tayim v'brayta. Akotin v'chasav l'acher. He gives possessions to another individual. Vayu ben avadim. And the other person says, I'm not interested in them because there are avadim, and avadim are going to cost me money. I have to pay for their mizonot, I have to take care of them. I'm not interested in taking care of them. Even though we have an opinion in the Gemara that he can say, I say, Veni Zantcha, right, that you go do work and I won't feed you. Nevertheless, we don't encourage that type of behavior. It's not... Right, a person doesn't like to do that. That's not really a nice way to act towards others, to say, you work and I won't pay you or I won't give you any food. So he says he doesn't want these avadim because they're going to cause him expenses that he doesn't want. If the second one, the recipient of the gift, was a kohen, they could start eating a truma now because he was too late. Right, he rejected the gift too late and it's already in his possession. Since he said, I don't want them, then the Yorshim, the first, or the grantor, already received, have them, and they're not Kohanim, the gift was never accepted. The gift was never accepted, it goes back to the Notain, it goes back to the individuals, or the Notain's Yorshim. Vavinamba. How could the Tanakama suggest that this Eved becomes a Kohen and the recipient automatically gets the gift, even if he's standing there screaming, saying, I don't want the gift? How does that work? So let's narrow the machloket down. When he's screaming originally, rejecting the gift, Everybody agrees it doesn't work. If he never accepts the gift, there's nothing to talk about.
Right.
Exactly. Very good. So that's right. But if he's Megaladat, as David says, that it's a chovah, then in chavin la'adam, shalom b'fanav, or even b'fanav. You can't do something on behalf of someone else. So here, if someone's trying to exercise his right to accept the property and taking the gift on his behalf, he says, I'm not interested in the gift. He can't accept it on his behalf. Shatak ulasov tzavach. He accepted it. He accepted the gift, and then he tries to reject it afterwards. Nothing doing. Then he's konet, and he can't reject the gift because he already accepted it. Once he's accepted it, the only way to get it out of his hands is to mafkir it, to remove ownership. Now the key plige. What's the case? Shezicha lo yadei acher vishatak. It was gone through a third party, and he was silent. Ulasov tzavach. And then it reaches his possession, and then he starts to scream about it. The Tanakama savar midashadik, since he was silent, kaninu. That's it. He was silent when the other party took it on his behalf. So he saw someone being zoche on his behalf. He says nothing. It's in his possession already. Now he's screaming about it when it reaches him. That's a change of mind. Change of mind is not going to help you once you were kone in the first place. So over here, where the avadim were being granted, this generous person said, listen, I want my good friend to have avadim. He says, come over here, can you please take possession of this avadim on his behalf? The friend is watching this all happen, and the individual takes them for him on behalf of this friend. So the friend doesn't say anything, and all of a sudden the avadim are brought to his house. He says, I'm not interested, I don't want these avadim. It's too late. They already were koneit when the other party took it on your behalf, and you said nothing. You did not reject them. The fact when it reaches his physical possession, he says no. That is indicative of what he felt when it was given to the third party. Why didn't he scream when it was given to the third party? What am I going to do until they reach my hands physically, until they come into my possession? I don't need to need it. I don't need to think about it. It's not an issue. I can scream all I want, but it's between other people. When it comes to my house, that's what I'm going to tell you, what I really feel about it. So I really don't want these individuals, I don't want these avadim, and I'm rejecting them. So that's my chok zutin, Tanakam Rabbi Shalom Chalal. But what's clear, again, is that if you reject it up front, never comes into your possession. If you do not reject it up front and then try to reject it later, it does not work, you're konet, that's it. The only question here is because the kinyan was done al yidei a third party. The kinyan was done al yidei a kinyan sudar or some sort of kinyan by the third party on your behalf. And since they did it on your behalf and you saw it and you were silent, so is that shtika ahoda'a on the gift? Or do we say that shtika is really talui until we see what his real dat is when they come into his possession? When they come into his possession, he says, no way, I don't want it. So he says that's mekaleh dat on his original shtika, that it was not a hoda'a. So that's machlokes between the Tanakam or the Rabbanan and Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Just to note over here, in the position of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, and this is part of why Tosos does not like the pshat of the Reshbam, he has a problem over here. Over here we have a case where we know that it was Tzavach Mi'ikara, and when it's Tzavach Mi'ikara, what does Rabbi Shimon Gamliel mean? It says, Kevin Shemar Hala Yevshiben Kvar Zachu Behen Yorshim. The Yorshim already get them. Who's Yorshim? The Yorshim of the grantor. Now, according to the way the Reshbam explained before, when you give something and the person rejects it up front, what should be the status of the property? It should be a hefka. Yet over here, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is saying it belongs to the Yorshim. Exactly, that's exactly what the Reshbam says. Rabbi Shimon lo svir lehi de Reish Lakish. He doesn't hold the Reish Lakish. So the Reshbam here has to create put a wedge between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel because it doesn't jive with his pshat above in Reish Lakish that it's hefker. Tosus, on the other hand, can agree with this because even Rabbi Shimon will agree, or even Reish Lakish agrees, when Tzavach Meikara, that's not hefker. It's only once it comes into your possession and then you try to relinquish it afterwards, that's when we say that it's not. And so he says, Mihu Hilchusok Reish Lakish. He says, the Aloha is like Reish Lakish, and we know the Aloha in this Machlokas is like the Rabbanan. Because even though we paskin everywhere, Halacha Kreb Shimon Gamliel b'mishnatenu, right? We say that Halacha is like Shimon Gamliel b'mishnatenu, so the Halacha should be Shimon Gamliel. The Rishbam makes an interesting point. He says, Hainu b'mishna, but not b'braita. The Halacha is only like Shimon Gamliel when it's a Mishnah, not a Braisa. Even though when we say the word, so if you say other places when we say Mishnah, Mishnah means Braita and Mishnah, means any Tanaic work. Nevertheless, when you say Mishnatenu, that means Mishnah and not Breita. So therefore, when the Gemara uses the term Halacha Rabbi Shimon Gamliel b'mishnatenu, mishnatenu means our Mishnah, the Mishnah that's found, right? And that's it. Not the Braitot, right? Not the any other Tosefta. That's not true. It's only with the Ishma, but that's it. But the Israeli Mishnah may not. That's a good question about whether our Mishnah Yod that we have. The question is that when it was printed into Yerushalmi, was that a later edition? And that was only put in to make it easier to read the Yerushalmi, rather than was that what the people in the Yerushalmi were actually reading? And what was the Girsot of the Mishnah may not have been the Girsot that we see in our Mishnah Yot. Alright, so it's an interesting, two interesting points here in the Rishbam. The first is that the word Mishnah Tenu means literally the Mishnah that's found in our Gemara, not any other Tanaic work. But the word Mishnah, in general, means Tanaic work. And so therefore, if you say Mishnah, we mean Breita or Mishnah. But we say Mishnah Tenu, we mean simply the Mishnah. So therefore, when we say Halacha Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Mishnah Tenu, that doesn't mean that in the Breita the Halacha is like him. And therefore, over here, the Halacha will be like the Chachamim, and the Halacha will be Reish Lakish, and there's no steer according to the Rishbam. Right? But the Rishbam has to go through all this because he has a problem between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. The way Tosos explains Reish Lakish, there is no steer between Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and Reish Lakish. Right now, Tan Rabbanan. So if a Shechem Meirah was granting monies over here, it grants 200, 300, and 400 each to each individual. We don't say that the order in which he dictated the gifts is also the order of the gifts in terms of priority. Why? The fichach yatzal lav shtar chov. If a creditor then comes to make a claim against the estate, guve mikulam, then he takes it out equally, meaning on a pro rata basis, he'll take it out of all of the gifts. So, for instance, over here, if this person comes out and says that you owe me 90, if he says him 90, then the gift of 400 will have to contribute 40, the gift of 300 will have to contribute 30, and the gift of 200 will have to contribute 20. So meaning that on a pro rata basis, each one of them have to contribute towards the creditor because they own the estate and the creditor has a claim against the estate. And we don't say that any one of them came first. On the other hand, Avalamar, Tnu, Matayim, Zuz, Leploni, V'acharav, Leploni, V'acharav, Leploni. So then, if he says that the gift is, grant the gift to this, and then what's after him, grant the gift to this person after him. So here he clearly states that there's an order, a sequential gift over here. Why that makes it? Omrim kol kodem b'shtar zuche. Therefore then, whoever's earlier in the shtar, v'shkim eira, gets first priority. V'ikach yetzalav shtar chov guva min acharon. That means that if a shtar chov comes out, then the last recipient loses first. Ain lo. If he doesn't have enough to pay the creditor, then govel mishlefanav. Then he takes the next one after him. Ain lo govel mishlefanav. Then he goes to the first gift, the gifty, because that equates to what normally would be in an estate. For instance, buyers who come and buy from an individual, they say, "Listen, I left you bnei chorin. I left you free property." So if the creditor comes, he has to go get from that free property first. And then it can come after Lukuchot. And if there's no, right, after Meshubadim, if there is no property left, then the last buyer is the most exposed to the creditor. And then he'll move up. So the same thing over here, in the gifts. The last recipient is the most exposed because he clearly made a statement of order of who he's giving priority to in terms of the gift. And that priority will stand in terms of the estate's obligation towards the creditor. Dan Rabbanan, Shechem Meirah. Shamar, Tnuma Taim Zuz Leploni, Bni Bechori, Kero Ilo. Give this 200 Zuz to my eldest son, who's a Bechor, like he deserves. So then he say, Notlan, Minotel Bechorato. He gets that money, plus he gets his Chelek HaBechora. Because the fact that he says, Dahavra Kero Ilo is extraneous Lashon, unnecessary Lashon. And since it's an unnecessary Lashon, we say, we're going to see this in a second, that unnecessary Lashon grants you additional rights. So the fact that you said something, Karoi Lo, that additional language says, you get this, and it does not impinge on your other rights. Because if you didn't need to say it.
Because you
didn't
say exactly the
evidence for it. Oh, so that's in a second. The Gemara is going to say, if he says, this will be given to him as his Bechorah, so there, that's all he said. then yadua lo yuna. The bechor himself gets to make a choice. Ratza notlan, he has a choice, he can take the gift. Ratza notel bechorato, he can take his bechorat. Why? Because even according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broku, who says that you can redistribute the Yerushat for your children, what he's not allowed to do is move the chelek ha-bechorat. Right, Tzvi, your question from way before, what do you do with the pasuk? Lo yivaker, it's ben hasnuah, pi ben ha-avuvah. That the pasuk stands, according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broku. You're not allowed, that's the one thing you can't change, is the bechorat. So the Bechor himself has a right to his Bechorah. Now, he can be a willing exchanger of his Bechorah for the gift. But that has to be his willing exchange. It's part of his privilege to do that. So he can either decide to take the gift, or he can decide to take his Bechorah. He will not get both, because over here it's clear he made a statement like David, that Bechorato, that is for your Bechorah. So the additional kira uilo, that again we're gonna, it's based on the opinion that the extra lashon says to you that you give him yape koach, that it gives him extra rights. And when you're giving him extra rights, the extra right means that he gets his bechorah plus the gift. Where he doesn't have the extra lashon, then he has a choice. He takes the gift or he takes his bechorah.
Why don't we say that this 200 is worth a certain percentage of his bechorah? In other words,
what he can't do is disinherit the bechorah. So if he's granting him a gift as a shchimera, what he's basically doing is granting him property, but he's now, that property now basically comes out of the picture. It's out of what was going to be, what the Yorshim are now going to collect. So the Bechora now has a right to take his chelek HaBechora with whatever's left. So now if it exceeds what the gift is, then he'll take that. If it's less than it, then he'll accept the shchimera's gift. So it has to do, right? Meaning that because he cannot take away the Bechora, meaning that he can't change the fact that the Bechora has a right, Bechor has a right to go whatever property is left over and claim as a Bechora. He can't change that. Even if he says, I'm giving this in payment towards your Bechora.
The Bechora, the tax interpretation of Bechora is not monetary, it is property.
Or it's rights. It's rights to take a double portion or the second portion and the whatever comes in Yerusha. Right. Whatever's there at the time of the death, he gets his double portion in. And you can't change it. Even if you pay him beforehand, you can't change that. Next case. Ushchim Yerash Amar Tnu 200 Zuz Leplonit Ishti Kera'ui La. Give these 200 Zuz to my wife that's appropriate for her. I mean, that sounds like her Ktuba, right? The 200 Zuz. Then Not Latan Ben Otel Etek Ktuba Ta. She gets them, plus she gets her Ktuba. Again, because he used the extra Lashon Kera'ui La, which was unnecessary. Im Amar Bich Ktuba Ta. This is her Ktuba. This is payment of her Ktuba. Yadal Yonah. Again, her hand, she has the upper hand here. Ratzah Not Latan. She can accept that as the gift. Ratzah Not Latan Ktuba Ta. She can also, or she can accept her ktubah, whichever one benefits her, because again, her rights to her ktubah, she's a creditor. She can exercise her rights, as, and he can't lock out those rights, he can't close those rights. The only way he can close those rights out is if she's mochelet. We saw before, that's only when she accepts a gift, ben abanim. When he distributes all his property and she accepts a portion amongst the banim, then she's automatically mochelet. But that doesn't mean in any other gift or grant of a gift towards her that she's mochelet. And that's what you have to say here. You have to say over here that lo machla b'kach. She doesn't mochelet on her ktubah here. And therefore she has the right to choose what she wants. She wants the gift. She can waive her rights to the ktubah. She doesn't want the gift. She can exercise her rights in the ktubah. Now,
a
100, right? That's the only way it would have been worthwhile to her. It's only worthwhile to her if her ktubah is less than the gift. Right? When that will be a case, is a case of a ktubat almana, which is 100 zuz. Otherwise, it'd be unlikely that she'd be willing to do this, because unless she feels that there's some sort of sentimental value, or there's some sort of ur that's going to happen, or there's a fighting in the estate that she doesn't want to be a part of, so it just eases her getting the money. Right? She takes the cash and she leaves and she says, I'm done. That's the other possibility. So Natsa Notel Ktuba. Shchimera, Shemar Tnuma Time Zuz the Ploni Balchovi Kira Uilo. Give this to my creditor, like his Roy Vim. Notlan, Venotel Tchovo. He gets the gift, plus he gets the Chov, because again, Kira Uilo was unnecessary. Viamar Bichovo, he says, use this money to pay off the debt. Then Notlan, Bichovo. Then that's all he gets. That's all he gets. So the Gemara says, "Mishum damar k'roi lo notlan v'notel et chovo." Just because he uses lashon of ra'ui lo, why should he get that money plus the additional money, the debt that he's owed? Meaning, why is he getting a double yish? V'deoma k'ra'ui lo b'chovo kamar. Maybe when he said k'ra'ui lo means that to pay his debt down. So Amar Rav Nachman Amar Liyahuna Hamani Rabbi Kivi the daik lishne yitera. You're right, that might have been the case, but this is like Rabbi Akiva, who learns that when you use an extraneous Lashon or unnecessary Lashon, the reason you did that is to grant additional rights or additional benefit to the individual. So now in that case, or in our case over here, all he could have said was give it to him for his debt. Kiroi lo is an additional lashon was unnecessary. Now, the Chachamim don't disagree with Rabbi Akiva. Akiva and the Chachamim both agree when you use extra lashon, that grants you extra rights. And that's not, why did they bring Rabbi Akiva as a representative of this? Because Rabbi Akiva argues, if you remember, we're going to do it in a second, it's not, we have the Mishnah, lo et abor ve lo et adot, when he says, I'm selling you the house, and then he says, but not the boor and not the dot, right? I'm not selling you the cistern, I'm not selling you the built out pits. Afal pi shekatov lo umko veruma, even though he says, I'm selling you the house with its, you know, umko veruma, it's erech lekach lo derech, divrei Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says you have to buy a way to get to your possessions. So if he sells the house, you get to keep the boor and the dot, even though you said, I'm selling you everything in this house from top to bottom. Nevertheless, you get to keep them. But we know that the mocher is mocher, right? Be'ayin yofeh. And therefore, he didn't leave himself a derech. So he has to go purchase a derech later on. He doesn't have to buy it. When he left himself a boor and a dot, he also left himself a way to get to them. Moder Rabbi Kiva, b'zan shamar lo chutz mi elu. When he comes along and specifies chutz mi yavor v'adot, she'enu tzarech lekach lo derech. He doesn't have to buy a way. Why? Because Amal came into Lo Tzorech, since it was unnecessary to say to exclude these items, because they're automatically excluded from the sale. Bikamar litzfuya milta kate. When he adds in that extra language, it means that he's coming in to exercise extra rights or to get extra benefits. So that extra benefit is that he doesn't have to buy a way to get to his bor and his dot. That they're part of his. They automatically now are left with him because he exercised that right by saying an unnecessary lashon. Achanami came into Lo Tzorech. Over here also, since it was unnecessary to say karoilo, that means he's granting extra rights. And when he's granting extra rights, right, we say to him, listen, that, this was a gift, and the chov is still outstanding. He's not paying off the chov with this grant over here. Now the chamim, what you see in that Mishnah is that the chamim already say you get a derech. That even when you sell it without the extra lashon, you get a derech. So Rabbi Akiva needs the extra lashon to get him a derech. But not that the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Akiva's position. It's just not necessary. Right, and it's not necessary in that case. But so the Gemara brings Rabbi Akiva as a representative of that position because it was necessary there. And Rabbi Akiva states that anytime you add on an extra lashon, that gains you some sort of extra right or it's coming to strengthen a position. So over here also, the Ra'ui Lo is granting him extra rights. Although it is slightly different because in the case by the boor and the dot, you're retaining rights. So the extra lashon is retaining rights for you. Over here, he's granting rights. Right? So that's, I think, what's bothering you, David, and you, Tzvi, which is that Kiroi Lo doesn't seem to mean that he's granting him an extra gift. I mean, it sounds like pay the debt down. That's what he deserves.
If you wouldn't have added the words, if right. You would have said, no, my time is just a punishment, what would I say?
There's just a gift. Then it would have worked also, the gift.
It would
because you didn't say ksuba.
Excluding the ksuba.
Right.
You get ksuba and a ksuba.
Right.
The fact that he has karoi na has some kind of a meaning.
Right.
So you say the meaning
yeah,
is
but you,
that it's not part of the ksuba. I said no. But I said it's
already
a ksuba. It's already exactly.
No, but you. The Rashbam says what you're suggesting. The Rashbam says it. He says here, if lo amar karoi lo, haba amrina de b'chovo b'chorato kamar, di toma time. That it's directed right at that obligation, at the existing obligation. So that's the answer to your question, is that you have to say what Shaul is saying, which is what the Rashbam says here, that if he left out the word both ro'oi lo, and he didn't put in ketubata or bechorato, then that money would be directed towards whatever obligation is there, and that's it. It would be to discharge the obligation, and that, therefore, the ro'oi lo or ro'oi lo is for sure extraneous, and that's why it then grants him extra additional rights. Alright, so now, the Gemara gets in use. New case. Tana Rabbana Shchiv Mira Shamar Mane Yeshli Etzel Ploni. This is a very interesting case. He says, I have 100 zuz with someone else. He owes me money. Right? So now Shchiv Mira says he owes me money. Edim Kotvim. Edim write this down. Document this statement. Afo Pi Shein Makirin. They have no idea if he's telling the truth or not. They don't know the case. All this Shchiv Mira is saying is someone owes me money. I'm a creditor. Lefikach Shu Goveh Tzarich Lavi Raya Divrei Rabbi Meir. Therefore, if someone comes to collect, you know, I mean, the Yorshim come to collect based on this statement of the Shechem Mira with this document, they have to bring a proof. Because the Edim simply are documenting his statement. They are not indicating anything about the veracity of the statement or about the value of the statement. They're just documenting the statement. That the Edim are not entitled to write it down unless they know that this is the case. Therefore, the document is a document in force. Because no one would write it down, or no Edim would agree to write this unless they knew for certain that that was the case. And once they've written it, it's as if and it's a full-fledged star that they can go and collect with. So Amar Rav Nachman Amar Li Huna Tana Rabbi Meir Omer Ein Kotvim V'Chachamim Omerim Kotvim. So it's the other way around. They reverse the position. V'Av Rabbi Meir Lo Amar Elo Mishum Beit Din Toin. So now the Rav Nachman comes along and says that Amar Li Huna Tana Rabbi Meir Omer Ein Kotvim, that you're not allowed to write it, like the Chachamim's position in the previous price that we brought. Chachamim kotvim, like Rabbi Meir's position in the previous price. All he does is flips the position. Ve'af Rabbi Meir himself, lo amar elo mishum beit din toin. And Rabbi Meir himself agrees to this position of the Chachamim. That means that we would write. Everybody agrees that the Edim would write down or document the issue. That's not a problem. Why? Because you have to bring a raya afterwards. What's Rabbi Meir's fear over here? Or really, in the previous price, the Chachamim's fear. Why don't we let you write it down? We don't let you write it down because we're afraid of a Beit Din Toin. We're afraid that you're going to bring this document to a Beit Din, and they're going to think of it as a contract in force. They won't know the din, that a din, by a shkemir, I write everything, and they don't check it out. And the Beit Din then will just be somech on this contract and collect on it. So Ramir says, we worry about Beit Din Toin, this idea. So Amar Rav Dimi Me'arda, Hilchata, Aloch is in Choshin, the Beit Din Toin. We do not worry about Beit Din Toin. Our assumption is that a general Beit Din or a Beit Din will do the right thing. If Beit Din does the right thing, then we don't have to worry about Edim documenting the statements of a Shechemirah, because they will always have to be verified, or their veracity will have to be checked by the Beit Din. So, my Shnami the Rava. Why is this different than Rava? Dama Rava, Ein Chotzim, Eleim Kein Makirim. A Beit Din will not allow Chalitza to take place unless they know that this is the Yabam and this is the Yavama. And we don't allow someone to be do miun with a ketano unless we know what the status or the parties involved, how they're here, why they're here, and what's involved with it. The fikach, therefore, kotvim get chalitzav get miun afopisha in makirim. Therefore, edim can document if they see or they know of a chalitza or they know of miun that's done. They can document it even though they don't recognize the individuals. Right? So why is that? Right? So why is it that we say that in chotzim elim kein makirim, in ma'anim elim makirim? Why do we say that Beis Din has to know the parties? Why does Beis Din have to know the parties before they do miyun or do they do chalitza? Even though we allow the Eidim to document it afterwards, why do we let the Eidim document it? Because we know Beis Din is checking it out. So if the Eidim witness or see something, then they can always document it because they know whatever Beis Din did was already verified. But why do we insist that Beis Din verify that the chalitza is done or miyun was done? Mishum techoshesh in the Beit Din Toin. Right. So the Gemara says it sounds like we're worried about a Beit Din Toin. So if we're worried about a Beis Din Toin, how come over here Rava says we worry about a Beis Din Toin? And before we said Rav Dimi Marado that the locha is ain choshin the Beit Din Toin. Sounds like in one case we worry about a Beis Din Toin, which is the case of Rava over here. And therefore, we only allow a Beis Din to exercise or perform a chalitza or a miyun or have it documented that Beis Din did this in a case where they actually checked it out. But why is that? Why is that the case? That means we're choshes that a Beis Din further on down the line will make a mistake. Because if we let Beis Din document and say, "Here's a chalitza, this is a miyun," even though they didn't check it out. Meaning that Beis Din would just say, listen, they did chalitza in front of us. They did the proper chalitza. They did miyun in front of us. Not that we know anything about them. We just know that they did a chalitza in Yibum. That means the next Beis Din that comes to, another Beis Din they come to and they want to get married, this woman wants to get married, they'll have to check out whether this was the Yibum or she's married. They'll have to do all the investigation. All they know from the first Beis Din is that they did a proper chalitza. We don't know if they needed chalitza. We don't know what their status was. We just know that they did the proper process of chalitza. That's what the first Beis Din is testifying to. And the first Beis Din will testify that they did a proper miyun in front of us. But not whether they needed a miyun, whether the miyun is valid. None of that is relevant to the first Beis Din. They just said we did whatever they needed in terms of a process. So the second Beis Din, then we'll have to go and check it out. The woman wants to get married based on this document. She would have to go get it. The second Beis Din will have to verify it. So what are we worried about? The second Beis Din won't know that the first Beis Din didn't know all the information. They'll rely on the documentation of the first Beis Din. So here we're worried. We have a Beis Din Toin that we're worried about. So Mar says, well, that's not the case. Beit Din bater Beit Dina lo daiki. Beit Dina bater Edim daiki. Right, it depends. I mean, that an action of Beis Din is classified by another Beis Din as being, you know, complete and done and verified.
Rabba's concern was a valid concern.
Right. Rabba's concern about what Beis Din Tolin is, where they're looking at another Beis Din and saying, okay, of course they did everything they needed to do. There we can assume that a Beis Din will be somech on another Beis Din by mistake and think that everything was done, you know, kedat v'din and checked out and everything, that when they wrote the document, it's final. When it comes to Edim, no Beis Din will just simply rely on the Edim. That's the job of the Beis Din. But the Beis Din is to go verify the information and check out what the Edim are telling them. So you guess we will not worry about a Beis Din Tolin when it comes to in face of Edim. We will worry about a Beis Din Tolin when it's a face or the action is taken by another Beis Din. Because there they might rely on them, and that's what we will worry about a Beis Din Tolin. And so the halacha is like Rav Nachman Aliba to the Rabbanan, right? The second way that Rav Nachman explained it, according to Rabbanan, which says that we are kotvin, right? That we are kotev because we're not choshesh for edim, but we are choshesh when it's a beis din to a beis din. We are choshesh between, like Rav said over here. And we'll just quickly do this next mishnah.
Ha'av toleish umachil duchom yeshirtze. So the case over here is a case where the father granted it during his lifetime to his son, with probably the Lashon HaMayom Alachar Mita. So when he does as such, as we've seen before, the principal of the property now belongs to the son, the peirot belong to the father until the father's death. At the father's death, then the peirot will also be granted, or that will move over to the son as well. So in this case, Av Toleish Umachil Dechol Mishiritzeh, since the father still owns the residual rights of peirot, he can pick fruit from the property, and he can give them to whoever he wishes, because the peirot do belong to him. If the father passes away and there are peirot that are already detached from the property, that belongs to all the heirs of the property. I mean, not singly or not uniquely to this son who was granted the gift of the property and now takes over the peirot. Since the peirot were already talush, since they were already removed or separated from the property, they now become a part of the estate. And if as part of the estate, they fall equally to all of the heirs, and he has no priority rights on this. So the Gemara says, talush in mechubar lo. So your suggestion over here is that which belongs to the estate is only that which fruits that have been picked already, but any fruit that's still attached to the karka, that will revert to the son. That means that fruit that even though it's ripe and ready to be picked, if it's mechubar the karka, if it's still attached to the trees or still on the vines, then when the father passes away, not only will the son get the rights to peirot in the future, he'll also get the rights to any peirot that are on the property right now. Only that which has been detached prior to the death of the father, that will belong to all of the heirs. Is that really true? Vahatanya. We have a braisa. Shamin et mechubarim lelokeach. In a case where, again, the same setup, where the father granted the gift to his son, and it says, Mayom alachar mita. The son goes ahead and sells the property. So again, we've discussed this before. The son in the gufa karka has a right to sell that gufa karka, and when his father passes away, that gufa karka will revert to the lokeach. So that's what the son does. In that case, what happens? We have a tosefta that says, Sheminet mechubarim lokeach. Then, in that case, we say, all right, Lokeach gets gufa karka, he gets the karka itself, but any fruit that are obviously talush belong to the estate, but even fruit that's attached to the trees, when this happens, they also belong to the estate, and they do not go along to the buyer. So this is the opposite or different than our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, we're suggesting that when the father grants it to the son in Miyom Lachar Mita, and then the father passes away and they're paid Mukhubarim, they go to the individual he gifted to, which is the son. Yet, if the son sells this to a third party, and the father passes away, then we say the peirot mechubarim belong to the heirs. They don't belong to the buyer. How come the buyer has less rights than the son? So the Gemara says, Amrulo lo kasho. That's not a problem. Kan b'bnou, kan b'acher. You're dealing with different individuals. When you're dealing with different individuals, the intent of the grantor are different. When a father grants to his son the property, Meyom Alacha Mita, he says, you get the gufa karka, he grants it in the most generous way. It's obvious from the fact that he granted his son this piece of property outside of the normal process of Yerusha, that he wants to grant him in the most generous way possible. And if that's the case, he grants him not only the property, even the perot that are mechubar the karka. On the other hand, when it comes to an acher, meaning that the possibility of acher can come up in two ways, either that the son sells it to someone else in the lifetime of his father, or the same would be true if a father granted Me'ayom HaChamita to another individual outside of his children, that there is, they have no chelek in the mechubarim. They get no part of the mechubarim. Because over there, the person is either selling it, or the father granting it to someone outside of his sons, they're not going to be as generous. When they're not as generous, that means that you get the gufa karka, but you not get the mechubarim. Why? When it comes to blood relationships, when it comes to your son, you're much more generous. So when it comes to his son, when he gives him the gufa karka, he gets along with it the mechubarim, the karka, anything that's mechubar. So only that which is talush will fall to all the heirs. When either the son sells it out to an acher, or the father himself gives it or grants it to someone else, in that instance, we give the minimum. What's the minimum they granted? They granted gufa karka. Gufa karka includes the karka itself, but nothing that is produced by the karka. And that includes both that which is talush, which obviously belongs to the state, but even that which is mechubar to the karka. Since it was already produced prior to the death of the father, those peirot, that output belongs to the estate, and all the heirs will join or inherit that jointly.
Okay, we'll stop over here.